Clubhouse.
Frisky
Fridays.
Frisky
Fridays in February.
Amp up your romance with Frisky Fridays in February.
Selections from the classics and tried and true favorites.
To brand new binges and sci-fi love stories.
We will have you snuggling on the couch every Friday in February.
Welcome to Frisky Fridays in February, Leoli edition. This is a Love It or Leave It. Tonight we're talking about my best friend's wedding, and we have so many people here to join us. I'm Mike from Pod Clubhouse. Joining us, we have Sunny and Brandy from the Book of Lies podcast. Hey, ladies, how you doing?
Good. How you doing?
You guys are usually here only for like true crime stuff. We usually bring you on with Sheila, who's also on the line here in a second. We'll say hi to her. But I feel nice. No one dies in this movie.
That's nobody. Me.
Yeah. Someone almost died. Yeah, but you know, it's February.
Somebody's heart died in this movie.
Definitely.
That's it. Well, and there is some fraud going on here, right? We have some illegal emails being sent and shit. So many lies.
I can't wait.
The Book of Lies is open and you guys are taking notes. I love it. Joining us from the Surely You Can't Be Serious podcast, we have Dee and Jason. Hey, Dee and Jason. Thanks for joining us tonight. How are you doing?
Hey, guys. Thank you very much for having us.
I'm doing great. Thanks for having us. Looking forward to it.
I am curious to see what your guys' history is with this movie, which we're going to get into one second. But we have one more person on the panel to talk to. Sheila from Pod Clubhouse and also Pop Culture Review, where she was a writer there over at my site, but is a regular contributor at Pod Clubhouse. Hey, Sheila, how are you doing?
Hey, everybody. I'm good. How's everyone doing?
Great.
Good, Sheila. Good to meet you.
Yay.
Sheila, correct me. Were you in Australia when this movie might have come out?
No, I was not. I was in Australia when it came out on VHS, and it was a regular occurrence in the dorm when we had like movie night and things like that. So I had to explain a lot of shit is what I really came down to being an American.
Was it mostly about like Chicago stuff that you had to explain to people or?
No, just like cultural idioms and vernacular. It was just like, what does that mean? And what does that mean? And why do people say things like that? Yes, it was torture being named Sheila living in Australia. I was literally told by a guy I was talking to one night. I was like, well, if you didn't want to tell me what your name was, you could just tell me to fuck off about 2 hours ago. I'm like, no. Literally, like, here's the driver's license. My parents named me Sheila. It's not a cruel joke.
That's hilarious. Yeah. Like nobody's named Sheila over there.
Yeah, then I learned what the other term for Sheila is in Australia, like prostitute. So I was like, no, that is definitely not me. That's in the rougher parts of the country. So yeah.
She's a lady of the night, she is.
Oh, that's a Sheila over there. That's a Sheila.
She's a Sheila. My entire Australian, like, you know, history is based on Crocodile Dundee.
Yeah. But funnily enough, we have an Australian director for this movie. So, you know, there's the tie-in.
His name's Paul Hogan.
And his name is Paul Hogan. Not that Paul Hogan.
That's hilarious.
So not that Paul Hogan has to go by PJ Hogan. And it's a screenplay by Ronald Bass. Two people who, I guess, after this movie, didn't do a whole hell of a lot. I mean, these are not, for a movie that was as popular as it was at the time, and this was kind of a big box office hit when it came out.
300 million.
24 years later, I mean, we threw this out and a bunch of people kind of volunteered. People still know this movie, which is maybe problematic because there are parts of this movie that I don't think hold up great, which I'm curious to see your guys, you know, take on it. But it's also got Say a Little Prayer for You, and it's got a cute little restaurant sing-along scene. So there's a lot of stuff happening in this movie. This is My Best Friend's Wedding. Came out in 1997. It is a classic Julia Roberts rom-com. Well, maybe not classic, because Julia Roberts kind of plays a villain, I think it's fair to say. She plays a villain. It's directed by PJ Hogan, directed by Ronald Bass, and it stars Julia Roberts, Dermot Mulroney, Cameron Diaz, Rupert Everett, all of whom are much older now. You guys, Rupert Everett is 61 years old now.
And he is still a fox.
Yeah, he is.
Okay, but he's 61, though. Good Lord. I mean, I was, so I was 19 when this movie came out.
Same.
And so I remember this movie. I saw this movie in the theaters. I probably took a date to this movie. Yeah. It's very probably very true I took a date to this movie. I definitely owned it on DVD at some point. I had seen this movie a lot. Maybe not 20 years, but when I watched it last night, it came flooding back and I was like, I know everything that's happening here. Dee, Jason, what is your guys' relationship? Dee, I'm going to go to you first because I have to be really good about moderating here. Had you seen this movie before? Was this a movie like an important touchstone for you back in the late 90s?
Actually, I didn't see it in the theater, but it does have kind of a special, it has a special thing for me.
Oh shit. Did you really lose your virginity to this movie? I was just, I was really just joking before we started recording.
So the Frank Sinatra song that's in this movie has some special meaning, and it's because of this movie. My wife and I started dating in 2001, and after 4 months we got engaged. Then another 4 months later we got married, and somewhere in that eight month long period we watched my best friend's wedding. The Frank Sinatra song "The Way You Look Tonight" that they have in this movie was actually our song at our wedding, like because of this movie. We watched this movie together and we're like, we don't have a song, we need to make this our song. So that's how we got our song at our wedding. So pretty big deal.
That's sweet.
That is, yeah. That's a good memory.
I know, aren't I sweet? I'm just a big old teddy bear.
You didn't have a best friend trying to wiggle her way into your romance, did you?
Well, that's another interesting story with regard to my wife. She and I met because she was best friends with another girl who was kind of obsessed with me, but that girl was married. And so it was all very, there's a lot of strange lies. Kind of Julia Roberts sneaking around things going on that I had no idea about until years later.
I love it. Yeah, that's awesome, but it's not.
It is awesome, but also sounds like probably a different podcast that we want to or maybe some Patreon content that we want to bring you on and talk to you about. So the seedy underbelly affair.
It was pretty dark. It was pretty twisted. Julia Roberts would have been proud.
How about you, Jason? What does this movie mean to you? If anything, maybe you hate this movie.
You know, this is one that my wife dragged me to. We were first married when this came out. We did see this in the theater. Anytime, you know, Julia Roberts came out with a romantic comedy, it's drag Jason to the theater and watch it, you know, that type of thing.
Don't let him lie to you. He loves romantic comedies. Well,
I was going to say, I mean, as you've gotten older and more mature, presumably, have rom-coms and romantic movies like softened in you, or is it still a chore?
There are certain ones that strike my heart more than others, of course. There are movies that I love that are rom-coms, but typically I'm more apt to go see the shoot-em-ups, but you know, I do what it takes to make my wife happy. So,
his favorite rom-com is Raiders of the Lost Ark.
That's right.
Well, I mean, it's sexy and it is definitely romantic. So, Brandy and Sunny, how about you guys? Is this what you guys saw together probably at some point?
Probably. When this movie came out, I was 15. Yes, I was young and lovely. Still, you know, whatever.
Say you're still young and lovely. So
thank you. We probably saw it together with my mom because my mom loved Julia Roberts. I remember buying this soundtrack. Did we go to the movies and see this, Brandon?
I don't think so. I think we saw it on VHS. We used to rent a whole lot of movies back in the day. So I think we saw it on VHS and I didn't pay attention to it. That might say it was probably rented and I didn't watch it. Like I would probably go back and forth from my room to the kitchen and stop and say, what the hell's going on here? But that's about it.
Oh yeah, me and mom used to get down on the movies. Brandy didn't want to hang out with us, but I love the soundtrack. Watching it again, I watched it a few nights ago as well, and all of this was beyond me. Honestly, all the deception. I was just so mad at Jules, and I was like, look at young Cameron Diaz. It just brought back all the feels, and I am so ready for this conversation.
No, I was like, this is ridiculous. What's happening here?
Julia Roberts typically doesn't play the bad guy in her movies or the villain in her movies. It's a really hard character to like in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. I think I was probably more sympathetic to it watching it yesterday than I was 24 years ago. It's still problematic, though. But before we get into that, Sheila, what was your history? I know it was a VHS tape for you, but do you remember if you caught this first run in the theaters? You and I were just out of high school together. A little fun fact. So Sheila and I actually went to high school together so many years ago. So we've known each other for a long, long time.
I did see this in the movie theater. I'm a big Julia Roberts fan, so I had just gotten out of a long-term relationship at that point, so I was feeling very jilted. So I jived with Julia Roberts's, you know, man-hating character at that time, and I feel like I need to hand back my female feminist card a little bit for indulging in this movie the way that I did back then. Having watched it just recently with sort of the lens of 24 years, I'm like, what in the hell was I thinking liking this movie back then? But at the time, I was resonating with her independent feelings.
Well, I think there are parts of this movie that, depending on which character you're identifying with, I think there are themes in this movie that all of us go through if you've ever had romantic relationships or close friendships of the other sex. There's a lot in there. I mean, this movie at its heart really does get to the conversation of, can men and women truly ever be platonic friends without their being something else, or one person ever getting too many feelings, right? And I think that's a conversation probably worth having, because I think the movie definitely explores it. I don't know it answers it great. Here's the official synopsis, or at least the official synopsis from IMDb. Let's see if this captures the flavor of My Best Friend's Wedding. When a woman's longtime friend reveals he's engaged, she realizes she loves him herself and sets out to get him with only days before the wedding. That's a one-sentence snapshot. It definitely captures the mechanics, the setup of the movie. So Julia Roberts' character does a lot of bad things in that few days before the wedding.
4 days. She had 4 freaking days.
I mean, and she's boasting, right? She's calling George on the phone and she's boasting that she can do this slam dunk, destroy this relationship in 4 days, and comes really close to it. Let's talk about casting, because Julia Roberts is a darling of America, right? I looked at her IMDb. I looked at her Wikipedia page. She was in a movie every year, a major theatrical release every year between 1988 and 2018, every single year except for 2 years. Only 2 years in that time period did she not have a major movie release. When 1997, when this movie comes out, she's like at the height of her stardom. I think she looks fantastic. She's 30 years old, so she's actually pretty close to the 28-year-old character she's supposed to be playing. Is she the right person for Jules in this movie? I mean, name aside, being the same. Brandy, what do you think? Is Julia Roberts good casting for this role?
I think she did a good job. I wasn't really a big Julia Roberts fan, so it didn't really like put me off of her as an actress. Yeah, she acted the hell out of this role, because she made me annoyed, which I think was the goal of her character.
Jason, let's get a little male perspective here, because I mean, maybe you and I are probably close enough to the same age. I feel like our generation grew up with Julia Roberts as like America's like next door sweetheart, from like Mystic Pizza and like Steel Magnolias all the way up through this movie and then even beyond. Sure. How does it feel watching her in this movie? Is it good casting? Does she play the villain well? Does she play the nasty, jilted, you know, friend turned enemy well?
I think so. I think she's got enough credit in the bank as like America's sweetheart. You are sympathetic with her character, even though she's being a mean, conniving liar, backstabber. You know, I struggled to see her as the vixen, the sexiness part of it. Yeah, she looks great. I she really is at the peak looks wise, I think. Right.
She doesn't do sexy well, though. She's much more.
I don't think so.
Yeah, she's much more girl next door, you know, someone you would laugh with and come to love through that way versus like pin up hot. I think like that's the male perspective anyway.
Yeah.
You know, when she laughs is when she's most charming. And you get a couple of those moments in this movie. I mean, she does the big toss her head back and, you know, the horse teeth come out and she's like, I mean, that's really charming Julia Roberts. How about you, Sheila? You already said that you were identifying her hard, but when you're watching this now 20 plus years later, does Julia Roberts hit you as a believable villain here, or is she too likable otherwise?
I mean, her off-screen personality makes her America's sweetheart, right? Like, so she picks these darling roles, and at this point, she's like mega wattage in terms of like her stardom. But in terms of her playing a villain, no, I don't buy her as a villain at all, because she comes off as too clumsy and too charming and too cutesy. At the same time, if you'd had cast, I don't know who else was like a contemporary at this time, like if you'd put Sharon Stone in this role, that is not a believable, you know, rom-com kind of a character. And then it just changes the whole dynamic of the movie. Whereas Julia Roberts has this kind of like, she can pull off this goofy rom-com, you know, trope with a little bit of ease. And it's a little bit more believable that she's not as underhanded, as dastardly as she comes across.
Yeah, Sharon Stone in this role is just blowing my mind. I mean,
I don't know. I just picked one out of the air. Sorry.
I mean, I feel like three men are dead by the end of it. And she slept with half the cast, and apparently I only identify Sharon Stone as Basic Instinct. That's all.
Casting matters, people. Casting matters.
It does.
But maybe you take like a Madonna, like a Body of Evidence era Madonna, and you put her in this role.
Then
we introduce Hot Wax into the whole thing, and that's...
Yuck.
That whole, like, you know, face mask scene just has a completely different, you know, thought track in my head right now. No. Back up.
I'm a lot more interested all of a sudden when you say Madonna in that
That's it. Well, you know, I mean, Madonna is doing A League of Their Own, right? You know, so she has some, like, serious, like, movie creds where people, like, give her a lot of respect. But then she has her, you know, Body of Evidence, which is not good. People are not watching that movie for her acting. No, but let's move off of her. Let's go over to her love interest in this movie, Dermot Mulroney. I have found women are very divided over him, and also possibly think maybe he's one of these actors who gets better looking maybe as they age and grows into his body and face a little bit. Let's take it to the ladies, Sunny and Brandy. What do you guys think of Dermot Mulroney as the love interest? Is this a guy you would fight over and betray your fellow woman for, to fight for?
No.
Okay, so when I first started watching it, right, I was thinking like regular Dermot Mulroney, like from Friends or whatever he's been in as of lately. And then when I saw him from 24 years ago, I was like, oh my gosh, you look so good. Still, like, he came like very like sexy. I was like, he's supposed to be 28. I found him attractive. If I had spent some months in bed with him and he was my best friend and we were cupcaking left and right, and if I would have found out that he was getting married, I'd blow some bitches shit up for that, probably. Yeah, definitely.
You should see my face right now. The first time I ever experienced Dermot Mulroney was in Bad Girls with Drew Barrymore.
Oh, yeah.
And Madeline Stowe. I liked him as a cowboy, but in a rom-com, I'm just like, meh. I think I like him more as a gruff kind of character than this guy that people are like, ooh, I want you now.
Like, you like him better as Dirty Steven Stevens from Young Guns.
Yeah, you know?
He's too handsome to be an awkward leading man, and he's not quite handsome enough to be like a sweep you off your feet leading man. I guess that's kind of my feeling about it. Dee, what's your take on Dermot Mulroney? Do you buy him as a romantic lead in this movie?
Well, he will always be Dirty Steve to me, but his character, very much like Julia Roberts' character, is more about the personality than the looks. If you put somebody else in either one of those roles, this movie, like we've said, isn't the same movie. She, being Julia Roberts, was at the top of her stardom at this point. She handpicked him. She handpicked Cameron Diaz. And they also both have big mouths. My son and I watched this one together, and he's like, there are so many teeth in this movie.
lots of teeth. They're the next stage of human evolution.
But it is, I think you got to say that they're someone that you are not like overwhelmed by their attractiveness, but are also not like, well, there's no way she would be with him or there's no way he would be with her. They're all very real. They're all very like, yes, I can see this person in this position, that she's after him, not because he's incredibly handsome, but because he's her best friend, because that's what comes across in the movie.
I think that's fair. Sheila, how about you? Does Dermot Roy, you and I have been talking about Dermot because he was recently playing a bad guy in Prodigal Son, which we are covering. So he's actually come up in conversation between us. But what do you think of him, 34-year-old Dermot Mulroney playing a 28-year-old romantic lead?
Oh, well, that's fine. Like, that's, you know, no difference. They have, you know, 28-year-olds playing high schoolers these days. I actually, you know, so from Young Guns, I liked him from Young Guns. I liked him in Copycat. He was in that movie with Sigourney Weaver. He played Holly Hunter's partner. So I kind of liked him as like the a good guy, like from Copycat, more so than Dirty Steve. In terms of like his turn later in life, like I had a hard time accepting him like in Hannah for season two on Amazon as like the bad guy in Carmichael and as Nicholas Endicott in Prodigal Son, because I did frame him in this sort of like rom-com kind of niche with my best friend's wedding. I liked him in this role because not because of his, you know, overly... Sorry, Dermot Mulroney, if you're listening, but, you know, he's like an average guy. He doesn't have sort of like Mike, what you said, like the overall sexiness of like a Harrison Ford,
right,
or maybe a Brad Pitt or something like that. He's believable in the sense that like he's a real guy and he's just, there's like this connection between them. And I think that's really what the attraction is there for him, is that they have this real history and they have shared memories and they're comfortable with each other. So there's an allure in the comfort, too.
I think they do have good chemistry as friends. I absolutely believe that. And I think he actually sells gruffy, scruffy, wandering on the road sports writer pretty well. Occupationally, I think it's actually dead on great casting. He is someone who he kind of probably smells bad all the time. You know, his character kind of smells like cigarettes and like coffee all the time.
I smell like cheap cologne coming off him. To mask all of that.
There's some patchouli wafting off of him, maybe. But I think his cologne is much more stale cigarettes and dead dreams and coffee. That's much more his vibe that I think he's giving off. I think the last one we'll talk about, I think we could devote an entire show to Rupert Effort as George, but Cameron Diaz we have to talk about, because she was actually not well established at this point. She had done The Mask, she had done She's the One, but that's it. This is a year before My Best Friend's Wedding, is a year before There's Something About Mary, which is what makes her career. So this is a real breakout role. And I think it was Dee, you said it, you know, Julia Roberts handpicked, once she was cast, she handpicked Dermot and Cameron Diaz for their roles. Drew Barrymore was actually reading for Kimmy and was actually very close to being cast. And then Julia Roberts came in and was like, no, I want these two. And of course, it's Julia Roberts, and she had taken the role. And so that's how that happened. It's interesting that she stuck her neck out for this relatively unknown. You know, she's playing 25 years old, but she's playing much younger. She is 25 at the time, but she's playing much younger.
She's playing 20.
Yeah, that I believe, though. I mean, there's a brainless, giddy innocence about her in a lot of these early movies that she's in, especially, but no more so than this one, where I buy her as the age. I think it's pretty good casting. Jason, what about you? Is Cameron Diaz the girl next door that you fall in love with if you smell like dead dreams, cigarettes, and coffee? Do they make sense as a couple? Like, I find Julia Roberts, Julianne, and his Michael make sense as friends. Does she make a good love interest for him?
Well, in this movie, she does. I think that she plays the sweetheart super well. And you've got America's sweetheart, and you've got kind of the up-and-coming sweetheart. She's young. She's ditzy. She is super sweet. But for me, her performance, she nails it when they're at the ballpark, and they're calling out her name, or Julie Roberts, like, Kimmy, Kimmy. And she slams open that door, and the accusations come out, and she's super pissed right then. That to me is when her character flips into dumb sweetheart to superstar.
Yeah, it's a great moment for the character, and I think it's a wise choice on the direction to have all of the attendants in the bathroom start to participate in it. It had a real New York vibe to it. As a proud New Yorker, I was proud of the Chicago crowds vocally participating in this girl catfight. Even someone saying catfight.
can we talk for a second? As someone who has maybe somewhat similar hair to Julia Roberts in this movie. I take great offense to the big haired Barb that is launched in.
But Julia Roberts
is
really
big haired.
It
more
is
like you got
big hair. What are you talking about?
When you've got like out of control hair and curls and you don't want to, you know, keep it under a bun all day, you know, you got to kind of embrace it a little bit. So
she could be Krusty the Clown's cute cousin. Sure, her hair is large and she made a career off of large red hair. I think it's probably after the big mouth and teeth, it's probably one of her most identifying features is her hair.
Which is why it was such a shock when she like cut it all off for Hook to play Tinkerbell.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
I mean, I was really more surprised that they were able to shrink her so little to play that role. I didn't realize technology had gone so far. It's fucking amazing. All right, Brady and Sunny, how about Cameron Diaz? Is she blowing you away? One, does she fit the role of Kimmy? And two, is she making good a good romantic interest here for the other woman?
I mean, like you said, this is like one of her first movies. She is young and like the way she's whipping around that car on the freeway and Julia Roberts is hanging on for dear life. I was like, she drives like she's a sophomore in college. Okay, this is legit. I liked her because she did seem like naive. She's like, oh, Jules, I want you to be my best friend. And she was just giving her vibes the whole time. Eyes all over the place. Like, I don't want to be your friend. I want your husband or your soon to be husband. But she was just like, oh, I'm going to make you love me. It was weird, but I did enjoy her. Definitely.
It's definitely a power of positivity, right? I mean, that is definitely her track is I'm going to charm you into submission.
Yeah.
You
know?
I thought the brilliance of her performance was that she didn't focus too much on the ditzy. Like she had the ability to win the battle from time to time. When they're in the car, she's winning the battle because Julia Roberts is scared out of her mind. When they're in the elevator and she's stopping the elevator to let her know that, hey, I know where he put you. He put you on a pedestal, but you're on a pedestal and I'm in his arms. And so she's not as weak and ditzy as that character could have been. And so the fact that she power plays a few times in this thing really makes it a much more in-depth character that I think that Cameron Diaz nailed.
Yeah.
And she could have been a lot more malicious, even in that scene, even when she delivers that burn. And it's a great line. It's probably one of the best lines in the movie. Love me, choose me is probably still my favorite line in the movie. But, you know, the pedestal and, you know, he's in my arms. That's a great put down. But she delivers it still, even then, in a way that is likable about her. Yeah. You know, Jules even says to George on the phone, she hates the fact that she is so likable because she's not ditzy. Yeah. She's just sweet and nice and has a good heart. You know, jaded people hate people with good hearts. Fuck them. You know, it's
the scene in the karaoke bar was where I was like, yeah, she knows what's going on, like at least under the surface, because that whole she's like, I can't sing. I hate singing. It's my biggest fear. And then Julia Roberts tricks her into going to a karaoke bar and singing. And she just sings this song so horribly. But the entire freaking bar is like, yeah, cheering for her. And yeah. Julia Roberts is like, oh, I guess. Yeah. OK, so everybody loves her. And I'm stupid for even trying to humiliate her.
Right. When she loses that round, really, that should be the sign for her to go home. Because if you can't get him to walk away, and he has the same look, he's the only other one other than Jules who has the same look on his face of my god, she is a horrible singer. But everyone else in the bar falls in love with her, and he kind of vibes off of that reaction. He gets okay with what she, this abomination of singing that she's done, because the crowd is into it.
It's karaoke culture, dude. Listen, yeah. I love karaoke. I will sing my heart out. And if you're up there on stage and you're trying, I'm going to clap for you. And if you're there, you're for that. So there's a bunch of garbage people that sing, but it's a good song. I'm going to sing, I'm going to clap you out through the song and we're going to get through this and cheer you on. That's how I am as a karaoke patron. I'm going to root on the bad and the good.
And listen, she throws on the white man overbite and she starts doing her little arm dance thing.
Oh gosh, yeah.
It's terribly endearing. You know, when the beat kicks in and she's kind of like, I'm dancing.
Know what to do with my face. Yeah.
So, Yeah. It's great. I mean, come on, what are you going to do? So, fun fact, so Cameron Diaz did not want to be filmed singing in a karaoke bar. The director lies to her, says, no, don't worry about it. We're just going to do it. It's going to be great. You're going to have fun. He films it, puts it in the movie. She's not happy about it.
Oh, that's hilarious.
It was so authentic, though, because she is such a god. That's really her singing in the karaoke bar. She's so god-awful, right? So they go with it in the movie.
She's got her looks to fall back on. My gosh.
So I heard that Julia Roberts and Dermot Mulroney went and practiced karaoke before the movie, but they didn't want anybody to recognize who they were. And so when they wrote their names down, they put Tom and Nicole.
That's really funny. I love that. We didn't mention this, but just thinking about The Road's Not Taken, you know, Sarah Jessica Parker was actually originally cast in, or was going to be cast in, the role of Jules. Julia Roberts' role, but she had to not take it because she was already committed to begin filming Sex in the City, which debuts the next year.
Right.
Thank God.
What does this movie look like if it's Sarah Jessica Parker?
No, she does not have the ability to pull this off. No.
She's so tiny, too.
Yeah. Carrie Bradshaw is not Jules. Not at all.
No. Yeah. I watched Sex and the City religiously for all the years that it was on. It was part of the counterculture. I was a big Mr. Big fan. You know, I love Chris Noth. So I was into Sex and the City. I find her so unlikable, but in a bad way though. You know, yeah. so like Jules is not a likable character to me, but I like Julia Roberts as she plays her. I find Carrie Bradshaw, I think I would have been murderous if I had seen this movie. And had to sit through it. I would have been like throwing popcorn at the screen, like, kill the bitch, you know, kind of like from the background, you know. I don't know. I just, would not have worked for me. It would not have worked for me at all. Let's talk about Rupert Everett. Let's go back to the guys here. Jason, Rupert Everett as George. Do you know Rupert Everett at all before you even see this movie? What do you think of him in this role?
I didn't know him before this movie. I didn't know what to make of him. You know, he looks like James Bond. I mean, he walking around, people would just stare at him because he's such a good looking guy. But he's charming and funny. I mean, really funny. Yeah, I thought he nailed it. I thought he was great. When he's trying to be affectionate with her in the taxi cab and he's super grabby and
he's grabbing a boob.
I mean, he's just going for it. And he's like, doesn't quite know how much to lay on and just kind of humiliate her. He's funny. It's funny.
Tough to be a straight guy on the fly, you know? He didn't have any time to prep the role.
How much should I grab her boobs right now?
How much squeezing here do we do? I've never really paid attention to this part.
I've done this before.
What's Rupert Everett doing for you in the role of George here? Is he the best friend you would always want to have with you in this kind of thing?
Yes, 100%. I actually have a best friend very similar to him. Male friend. So when he got married, no, I did not do any of that kind of stuff.
You didn't say he flew him from New York just to fuck me? You didn't say
no,
that?
I actually flew him from New York to Australia to be at his wedding. So I win. No, George in this movie is absolutely the scene stealer. And he makes it redeemable in the end.
He makes Jules redeemable?
He makes Jules redeemable. Well, I mean, the movie is kind of saved, I think, because of George. But in terms of her character, he redeems her. He's the only one giving her like the straight knowledge. And, you know, even though he's kind of feeding into her insanity and psychotic jealousy by telling her to tell him the truth. But at the same time, like, he does give her this opportunity to redeem herself. So I like him for this. And I think you have to kind of look at the cast as an ensemble in order to really understand their chemistry. And he's the emulsifier in this cake batter that makes this thing, you know, kind of be something we're talking about 24 years later.
I had to take emulsifier one time, but it was only for like 6 months. And I got it was like
emulsifiers are like eggs.
I didn't even need a refill for it. It was good. I was all good. Brandy, is it acceptable for a best friend to kind of egg her on and indulge her, but then put the brakes on here? Is he doing what a best friend should be doing?
If I was him, I'd be like, listen, you weren't even thinking about this dude until he called you and told you he was getting married. So shut up.
That'd been a short movie.
He's kind of doing that.
Like, well, he gets to that point when she finally interrupts him in his book club meeting, right? And he says, you know, Michael's chasing Kimmy, you're chasing Michael, who's chasing you? No one. You lose. It's, you know, yeah. Then he becomes Gene Wilder. Good day, sir. You get nothing. You know?
Yeah.
And so he finally has enough, but I always wonder, should he have drawn that line in the sand a little bit sooner?
I think so, because when she calls him and she's like, he loved me for 9 years. And I'm just like, dude, like, he loved you for 9 years, but he's marrying somebody else. If as your best friend, I'd be like, listen, sweetie, you don't even want to get married. So leave the dude alone.
Yeah, I mean, that's straight talk that I think we'd all want from our friends. But again, if he does that, though,
the movie's over. But I
think a lot of the most endearing parts of the movie go by the wayside, though, because I think I agree with Sheila. He is the scene stealer, right? He's the one who really gives this movie kind of some bounce and life. And a lot of the things that people still talk about involve him one way or another. Whether it's the restaurant scene, whether it's the, you know, there may not be marriage, there may not be sex, but good God, there will be dancing. Like, that's still one of the popular memes and gifs from this movie. I think this movie is a hard, hard sell without him in it. But kind of funny, though, because he's so much older than the rest of the cast. Dermot Mulroney is 34, playing 28. He's already 38 years old when this movie comes out, Rupert. God, he looks fantastic, though.
But he's, like, ageless. Even now, at 61, he's still a fox.
He's going to be like Sean Connery.
We understand your daddy issues. We've got that, Sheila. Yeah, you know it what? Is noted. You have noted it. Go take a shower. Good Lord, girl.
But he's gay. He doesn't want me.
He doesn't want you, Sheila. He doesn't want
I'm okay with it. But he's sort of like, he doesn't really have like an age. Like, I get the sense that he's older than Jules in this movie because he's her editor, right? So he's above her. But yeah, it doesn't not work. You know, it works.
I think he's the perfect gay best friend. Listen, if I were Jules, if I was 28 and I was chasing after a friend that I was like, oh my gosh, this guy's getting married, I think I love him. And then I would say, okay, friend, pursue, see what happens. Go ahead, check it out, see what happens. And if she's calling me saying, oh, I want to get him, I would like, okay, well, tell me what's going on. I would be supportive, but at that point where she's running after him and he's running after her and no one's chasing me, I would have to bring this realization to her attention and be like, okay, honey, you got to give up the ghost. Like, it's over. He doesn't want you. I would have indulged, but then when it's time to go ahead and pump the brakes, reality is here. You know, he's a good friend. I would have appreciated that.
I think that's right. And I think there's also a little bit where he's having fun, too.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly. Well, that's what I was thinking. I was like, he's just toying with her because that's what I'm like, this is kind of mean. But again, I'm the type that'd be like, listen, leave him alone. I wouldn't just send her off on a wild goose chase so I can watch what happens.
But then he does the right thing. Like, he shows up and he shows up at the wedding to like help out his best friend and, you know, realize in her moment of need, she's going to need me. Mm-hmm. And she does.
He also might fly out too, because the last time he hears this crazy bitch has stolen a bread truck and is driving through Chicago like a nutbag, he's like, I have to go bail her out. He's like, honey, I gotta leave this boring dinner party I'm sitting at with you. I gotta go bail out my nutsy straight girlfriend over here.
Oh no, he was in the quiet book club at that point.
Yes, but no, she calls him on the bread truck. Isn't it on the bread truck where she's
screaming?
The bread
truck is in the quiet book club.
Into the answering machine.
He's at the book club, and that's when he tells her, like, yeah, you know, Kimmy's, you know, Michael's chasing Kimmy.
The chasing, right.
Yeah, that's at the book club, and everyone's turning and looking at him.
Oh, I like when she's yelling into the answering machine. I think that's
and great. Everybody's listening to the message or trying to have, like, this nice dinner
party. Going well!
Yeah. That is dinner party.
If you all went around the horn, and maybe we can do this, if we went around the horn and said, pick your three favorite scenes, I'd make you bet most people have him down for at least two of the three favorite scenes from the movie, at least tangentially, if not. But maybe I'm also making a leap that everyone likes this movie, and that's something we should discuss.
That's why we're here, Mike. Come on.
We've been dancing around this issue.
All right. So things that, that haven't held up well, I think right off the bat, the very old-fashioned, misogynistic, I am only here because a guy gives me value and validation opening number for this song, the hoping and a praying, wishing and a kissing song.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that, watching that as as grown-ass women, you know, taking care of your own. Are you okay with the kind of place that men have in this movie, giving women validation? Has that held up well at all?
That song is basically advice from Cosmo circa 1942. I'm not about it. I'm not for it. I'm just like, these bitches are dancing around with these flowers and this. Just seriously, did like, you see go Rosalie? Get a job. I did.
Did you see Rosalie from Grimm? Yes.
Yeah. Go get a job and like, don't worry about that shit. But
as far as a movie goes, is this a cute rom-com? Is this something that you would want your child to watch when they got to be older and they're looking for the direction as a teenager or a young 20 something and say, this is an example of what a man and a woman do when they're in love and they want to chase the other and show how to love someone? Is this movie hold up as that? I think it's very much of the 90s, but in 2021,
it wasn't even like in the 90s. It was just like a rom-com that we didn't take seriously. But like, if I was to sit my son down, I'd be like, this is fiction. This is not real life.
Right.
But that opening montage, I read something recently where it says that opening montage, if you look at it from Jewel's perspective, that's what's going on in her head throughout this movie. Mm-hmm. She's wishing and hoping, you know, to do the things that he likes to do.
And then you'll be his.
And then you'll be his, exactly. So it's kind of like a reflection of her in this movie. But no, to hold up, like to sit my son down and be like, this is not an example of how men and women treat each other. You go to school, you finish school, you don't stop school for anybody.
I get that interpretation, but I think it's even more troubling because I think there's so much of what they talk about the Kimmy character, the way she's just going to kind of like sad dog follow him around the room, around the country. You know, if Sacramento sweeps whoever the fuck it was, you know, like that's how they're gonna decide their honeymoon. Bitch, take me to Paris. What the fuck? I'm not going to Texas to San Antonio for my honeymoon.
She's been everywhere, Mike. She's been everywhere. She wants to be with the man she loves.
That's not the point. But she's following him around, though. It takes Jules' meddling for her to admit she is putting her life on the hold. She does want to go to college. Why does it take the crazy best friend trying to break you up for her to admit that? I'm not okay with that. I don't think that's a great message. I think that opening song, a lot of lyrics are being applied to what we see Kimmy doing. That's a problem.
I think the question with that is, why are you getting married now? Like, you are 20. You don't need to be married. What are you doing?
Decided that 28 was when you needed to do a marriage pact for?
That is of the time, though, right? It's only post the 90s where people are still living with their mom and dad on the regs at 28, let alone married. You know, that's very much still a 90s thing.
Judge me. Don't judge.
But that was the end of a generation, though, where at 28, you really were like a spinster for that generation. That's the very tail end of that 60s, late 60s, 70s, 80s, and then through the early 90s.
Gross.
My parents got married when they were 19 and 20. They had my sister when they were 20 and 21, you know, and that was in 1970. That was very much that generation. I think the characters here, they're the very tail end of that. Their parents are still of that mindset of, all right, clock is a ticking, you know, Marissa Tomei and My Cousin Vinny, like, my clock is ticking like this, you know, like that's very still the mindset. And this is the end of that. I think by the early aughts, that it all becomes finish your education, get your career set, or man or a woman will come later. Dee and Jason, how does this movie hold up to you guys as guys watching this with wives, maybe with kids, sitting down, listening to that song, the idea of the woman kind of chasing the man or, you know, putting on airs and pretending to like what he likes so they can land a man? Does any of that age well? And if not, does it sink the value of this movie?
Number one, there's two things there. Pretending to be somebody that you're not for somebody that you're interested in. On that one, I'm going to say, if you're saying you've never done that, I'm going to call you a big fat liar. Every single human being has been like, oh yeah, I'm totally into whatever you're into. And that's all about me. All of us have gone through that at some point. And then 3 months pass and you're like, why am I pretending to be somebody I'm not? And then as far as sacrifices go, I'm just sitting over here thinking, like 2 days ago, my wife asked me to go fill up her pickup truck, and I was out in negative 20 degrees with the wind cutting through me like glass. And I was like, I don't want to be here. I don't want to be doing this, but I'm making sacrifices because this is the woman that I love. And so whether it's the man or the woman, I think everybody has to make sacrifices in a committed relationship that you wouldn't you wouldn't make if you weren't in love with the person. No, I don't think that the necessarily the I'm chasing the man and doing everything I can for him is the right mindset to have. But if you look at it from the perspective of if you were anybody who was in love and saw that love about to be lost, you might do some pretty crazy crap that this movie still holds up. Crickets. All right.
when they made this movie, just going towards how unlikable Jules was, the original ending for this movie had her, after Kimmy and Michael leave on their honeymoon, she's had her maid of honor speech, which we should talk about whether or not that is a redeemable moment, even before George pops up. Originally, she meets John Corbett in a cameo role, because he isn't John Corbett yet. He's no one, because Sex and the City hasn't come out yet. So she meets a guy, and that's originally how the movie ends. The audience, they test this screening with the audiences, and A, people hate her character so much, and they love George so much that they want more George and less Jules. They actually rewrite the entire ending to where George kind of comes and saves her face, gives her an honorable out where she doesn't have to be this pariah at this wedding that she tried to ruin the entire movie. That was all rewritten after audiences shit all over the original ending, which begs me to ask, does her realization that Michael and Kimmy should be together, beginning with like where she chases them into the iconic Union Station, Chicago, which is also where Untouchables films their great scene with the the stair carriage, scene with the baby carriage on the stairs. Starting there, she really begins this arc of I'm going to stop interfering with this wedding. I've lost and they should be together. Does the movie do enough to redeem her? Are you happy with her at the end of the movie? Does the maid of honor speech about a monster trying to break you up, does all of that add up together at the end, make her likable? What do you think, Sunny?
I would have kicked her out of my wedding. I'm like, thank you for getting us back together, but you can go. I don't want you here. I don't want that evil darkness in here. But watching it, I felt once Cameron got to push her up, jam her up in the bathroom with the other girls, talking all that mess to her, and she was like, he's mine, you can't have him, I win, you lose, deal with it. And she's like, okay, you're right. And then the dream, when she's like, hey, I had a dream, a monster tried to break up your wedding, you know, what a horrible, big-toothed-haired woman. I think it doesn't give her full redemption. I think we feel a little bit better about her situation and that she's apologized and she's admitted to what she has done. I don't think it's full redemption, but I think we could start to forgive her and give her a little bit of Rupert Everett at the end, you know?
I think she should have been made to grovel. And no, I don't believe she was redeemed at all. And as a matter of fact, that whole thing about borrowed, you guys don't have a song, so you can borrow this one. I'd be like, you can keep your song and right. You can never call my husband after this. Bye.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. And I was hoping someone would bring it up so I didn't have to bring it up. Guys, ladies, I would not be comfortable if I'm Cameron Diaz, if I'm Kimmy, I'm not comfortable with how touchy-feely these two fuckers are.
No, are you
still humping? That's what I'm thinking is, like, are you still boning each other when he comes to New York or wherever on the road with, you know, following around his teams? Is that okay?
Nobody in the family is suspicious of a woman who looks like Julia Roberts around the groom. I'm like, somebody needs to speak up and say, you might want to watch this girl.
I think the two sluts are a little bit.
I guess that's true. Those two.
They're watching the sluts instead.
Rachel Griffith is one of the sluts.
She is one of the sluts. I love that.
The debutante sluts.
The vengeful sluts from Georgia, I believe it was. I like them so much more now than I did 24 years ago.
Yeah, same. For sure.
They were like, after George, they were probably my favorite characters in the movie. I found them really entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
The frozen mouth to the David made me laugh in a way. It definitely didn't make me laugh in 1997. Not that at 18 I didn't know stuff, but it didn't strike me as funny then. It struck me as really funny last night. Really, really funny. I'm not sure if I'm more troubled with how overtly kind of sexual Jules is towards Michael in front of Kimmy and her family, or how kind of sexual Michael is and flirty Michael is back towards Jules. Like, he's given her all sorts of like bedroom eyes and touching her. Kimmy doesn't see this, but he sucks her finger to get the ring off of it.
That was after they were on a break. He was like, I don't want it. But I agree, it's problematic.
You just used the friend's defense on me?
I'm sorry. I did.
It's okay, he was on Friends, it's allowed.
Exactly. Come on, full circle. But it is problematic. It's problematic, definitely. I wouldn't like it because I have a lot of male friends who, like, I'm like, oh, this is my best friend. Oh, this is my good friend. You know, we went to college together. Oh, we only hooked up one time. Oh, you know, whatever. I would have a problem with it because no, don't call, don't write. It's not okay.
Yeah, you know, and no one calls her on it. No one says anything about it. Really, no one is like, hey, Kimmy, I think your husband might be still fucking his best friend. Y'all should look into that. That's not good. No one ever says anything. Are we just imagining it and none of the hundreds of extras in this movie are paying attention? I don't get it.
Kimmy's dad needs to speak up.
Yeah,
he saw her prancing around the baseball game. And
okay, I've got moves you've never seen. Oh, okay. Yeah. What's that?
Okay, so I told you I liked Eventual Sluts more now than I did then. There were things I didn't like more now than I like then. Man, her in that shirt doing the moves you haven't seen, I like it. I still like it. Girlfriend was in good shape, and she really knew how to wear like a little belly shirt, and then she's got that blue crop top at the end. Everything about Julia Roberts was very much working for me in this movie, even still today. But yeah, you can't do that. Like, you're like making kissy face with the brother, like you're trying to give like the little brother a boner just to make the Michael jealous. What is happening? What are you doing, Jules? But I think Kimmy's father really liked Jules. Like, I don't know that I'm giving access. I'm the owner of the White Sox, and I'm going to give this woman I don't know access to my office.
No. That's right. Data breach right there. That's a problem. That's a problem right there.
Get
data
a book
breach.
Of lies. Get a book of lies. let's talk about that. As far as things that as a friend, whether you're a male friend, girlfriend, male girlfriend, sending an email from your soon to be father-in-law's email account. And how cute was email in 1997, to your boss to have you fired? How does Michael ever talk to her again? That's not forgivable, on top of all the other shit that she does. How does he ever forgive her for that?
It wasn't supposed to get sent.
Look at you being a Julia Roberts apologist.
And maybe she had on the crop top. Did she have on the crop top when she told them?
The guys are a lot more forgiving than Julia Roberts. My wife would not forgive Julia Roberts and not allow her at the wedding for sure.
Well, that's a good question too, is if you switch the roles and this is a guy trying to break up a lady best friend's wedding, I'm pretty sure the guys are getting into a fist fight, right? Yeah. There's going to be bloodshed, right? The Kimmy character is going to be like, you know, catch me outside, I'm going to go whoop your ass, you know, for what you're doing.
Step up to the microphone, let's go.
Yep.
So I one of my favorite things about this movie is this idea of, and the questions this movie raises, is this idea of whether or not men and women can really ever be friends and just be platonic friends. I think everyone says that it's possible, but is it really? Isn't there ever just a little bit of tinge of what could have been, or maybe there is a glance one night? What do you think? Can guys and girls ever truly be friends platonically?
Yes, I believe so. I have many male friends that I've never interacted with in other than a completely platonic way. Yeah, I think they can. It's just, you know, you have to come at it from a respectful tack.
Is this where I mentioned the Billy Crystal lines from When Harry Met Sally?
Yes, this is exactly. This is what you're here for.
Wait a second. Am I not picking up on something?
No, you haven't. No, I'm just kidding.
Hit us with a little When Harry Met Sally. Let's school some people who weren't around in those days watching movies.
Billy Crystal's character in When Harry Met Sally very clearly says, can't happen. It's not happening.
I agree. There's always a little bit of hoping and a wishing, praying and whatever the fuck. There always is. I think there's always a little bit. Because let's take this movie. Michael, who admittedly is in love with Kimmy, he says all the right things. He does all the right things as far as Kimmy goes. But he is definitely kind of also having sex dreams about Jules on the regular. Like, for sure.
He told her that he was crazy jealous when he thought that George and her were engaged. The day before his wedding.
He sucks her finger down to get a ring off. You know how many other ways there are to remove that ring?
We haven't even mentioned the boat ride, right? So the boat ride, he says, I need to spend some time alone with you. And they're going on the little, you know, Chicago riverboat tour. And he says this line about, you know, if you love someone, you should, you know, tell them or the moment passes you by. Like, he was goading her to say that she loved him. And he just incited it, but she redeemed herself slightly there by not trying to do it right there.
Well, she was just being a chicken shit, though, right? I mean, she just didn't have the spine, though. And honestly,
I'm giving her too much credit. I know.
As far as direction goes, art direction goes, that's actually a beautiful scene because they're in the shadows, and then it says, and then they emerge back into the sunlight, and they both say, like, passes you by. It's a very well done scene, but she's just being a chicken. She's not for the honor of Kimmy at that point. She's not being an honorable person when she says that.
She's completely terrified.
She just hasn't pushed herself over the edge yet. But he was egging it on is
my problem with that scene.
How about you guys, Brandy, Sunny, what's your take here? Can men and women truly ever be platonic friends without some little bit of hoping and a wishing, praying and a sucking face going on?
I think so, just because there are people that, you know, male friends that I've had that I had absolutely no interest in whatsoever. I mean, I couldn't speak for them on their part, but as far as I'm concerned, they were asexual.
Well, that might be a fair point. Maybe it doesn't go both ways, but I think my hypothesis would be at least one side of that equation is always a little bit more interested. What do you think, Sunny? Do you agree with Brandy?
I don't agree with Brandy. I feel like when you make friends with someone, depending on when you meet them, you're attracted to them. Like you make friends with people that you're attracted with. If they're of the opposite sex, there's that thing that pops into your head. You're like, hey, maybe there's something here. Maybe there's something here. I don't know. And something may happen. Something may not happen. I think you have to get to a point in your life when you're like, hey, I don't know. This is a hard question to answer. I think there's always going to be something, either previous or later on in life. There's always that opportunity to have entanglement. No.
Before you know someone, what draws you to them is some kind of chemistry. It's either their personality or it is a physical thing. Something draws you to them. Whatever that is, in a romantic sense, is also probably a building block of the romantic sense. So if you never have sexual or romantic feelings about someone, okay, but something still drew you to them as a friend. I'm sure there are a ton of philosophers that say all friendships are based in part a little bit on sexual attraction because we're animals and that's how we get down in this world. I subscribe to the belief that on some level, there's always some kind of there's enough alcohol or enough mind-altering drugs, something to reduce inhibitions enough to push people over an edge especially when they're of different genders as friends. Because something puts them – men and women typically don't have a lot of interests shared. Obviously, they do. I mean, that's a very gross overstatement and broad generalization. But – stereotypically, they don't. And so when a man and a woman become friends, something probably more than just a love of stamps or whatever has pulled them together.
I love stamps. Here's the thing. Like,
hey, I'm a philatelist and I'm proud. You
back
know?
In the day. Okay.
Oh my God, that sounds so dirty.
Yeah, it does.
Okay. It's weird.
Y'all ain't seen my tongue work on a stamp. You don't know.
Oh my God. Oh my goodness. I just know, like, long ago when I'd be like, oh no, you know, I have a boyfriend or I'm dating someone, the guy would be like, oh, well, do you want a friend? Like, no, I don't. I have enough friends.
But yeah, no, that's
different. Aren't Bismarcky?
That's right. I was thinking Bismarcky that whole time, too.
Oh, baby, you.
It's not a podcast. Unless Mike breaks into song, it's not.
He's just friend. Uh-huh. MJ, he's just a friend. I'm baiting you. Listen, my Biz Markie is on point. Don't even.
That's still better than Cameron Diaz, though.
Wow.
That's fair. I also dance a lot like Cameron Diaz, though. So
I've seen him dance. I can attest to that.
You shut your mouth.
Hey, you invited me on here.
Yeah, that is true. This is one of the films that I think of when I think of male female relationships. And I don't know that it does a great job of saying the opposite of my defense. I think this movie supports the idea that these people were friends for so many years. Nothing ever happened. But then, the little green eye jealousy comes and then kicks us into overdrive, which really just supports that there is something dormant there between them. And as soon as these two are together, and I think they even say in the movie, it hasn't been that long since Jules and Michael had seen each other, which supports this whole him and Kimmy together is very whirlwind. There is a sexual attraction between these people. Kimmy always has to be worried, I think, that Michael and Jules are going to go do something. No matter what she says about the pedestal and he's in my arms, I'm going home with him tonight. There's always got to be something in Kimmy's head that Michael is home with Jules. No?
They just can't be alone together anymore. Once I become Mrs. Michael, you can't see Jules by yourself. She's either coming here while I'm here or I'm going with you. You guys can't be alone. She's proven that she cannot be trusted.
She can't sit with us. Like, never, no. Lose her number. Change your phone number. She cannot sit with us.
Yeah, I subscribe to the belief that I still find it hard. Not only was she still allowed to be at the wedding after everything she did, but then still give the maid of honor speech. Let one of the vengeful slut cousins speak. Why are you letting this woman speak? God knows what she's going to say.
Yeah, seriously.
Dee and Jason, thinking about this movie, what holds up the worst for you, or what doesn't hold up well at all for you when you watch this movie now?
Julie Roberts running was terrible.
Oh yeah, that's awful. She's not even in a heel. She's just
a horrible runner. She runs like Phoebe on Friends.
I enjoy watching her run, but it's still awkward.
I don't know. I think this is a cute movie. I'm okay. I'm kind of an old fashioned guy, so I'm okay with the loving devotion scenes and the old fashioned wedding and that type of thing. But I think that the idea that the groom and another woman can be that much alone the night before his wedding is just a bad idea. It's just a bad idea.
Yeah,
so
I agree. I don't think it's realistic. I no matter how chill your fiance to be, your wife to be is, I can't see any woman being okay with this.
No way. Not my wife. No way.
Ladies, let's flip it. If it was reversed, would you let? Well, if you were Kimmy, are any of you ever letting your husbands to be go out with Julia Roberts the night before your wedding?
I'm wondering where the bachelor party was, because there wasn't one. There was no bachelor party.
All these events, there isn't a bachelor or a bachelorette party to be seen.
Well, I think you have to imagine Julia Roberts probably stripped from Michael in his bedroom, like,
oh,
alone.
Oh, no, you didn't.
Well, no, he already saw her. He's like, you look really good without your clothes on. So he's already had the strip show.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's seen her naked apparently several times. She sleeps like an animal, though. Every time they cut to her bedroom in the morning.
She's attacked the minibar, for God's sake. She's depressed. Yeah. Come on.
It looks like she either held a wrestling event in her room or a major sex orgy every single time they cut to her bedroom. So, I mean, God knows what's going on, like, bachelorette party-wise or bachelor party-wise.
Does he have any friends? I didn't see.
Kimmy have any friends? Her what's best friend, you know, there? Is not there. Yeah. She's got no other friends.
They lie. Isolated themselves that much. Codependent.
Well, I think they played on Kimmy's naivete that she was 20 and that she's in Michael's arms and she was very comfortable in her position. She was like, I won, he's mine, we're getting married. She wasn't really shook up by anything that Jules did. Like, everything that Jules did, she countered. She groveled for forgiveness. She was like, it's a misunderstanding. Like, everything that Jules threw at her, she, bob and weaved and apologized. And I think she was just really comfortable with her relationship with Michael, that she was comfortable leaving him alone with tramp-ass Julia Roberts.
Which, good for her for having that kind of maturity at that age.
I guess so.
I think you add 10 years on to Kimmy and she's a little bit more jaded and maybe a few more wrinkles, and she's like, fuck no.
Exactly.
You're not going out with her. That's 10 years of smoking. That's why she sounds like that.
Okay, honestly, smoking and drinking.
Smoking and drinking, wondering where my husband is, you know? Sure. That's what the remake of the movie looks like. Are Kimmy and Michael still married? Are they still married now as they come to celebrate their 24th anniversary this year?
Nope.
No, we got one no. So. Brandy's a no. Sunny, what do you think?
I think they would have to work really hard in their relationship, and Michael would have taken a job for the Sox, and Kimmy has all these kids, and they are still married. I'm sorry, they are married. Yes.
No, she's bitter because she gave up school for him. And
pissed. No, not in my head. They're married.
Yeah.
So Michael, who wants to be a lifelong wanderer, now has a brood at home of children and also works for the White Sox, the thing that almost cost him his friendship with his lifelong friend over when she did it.
He realized 5 years later that it's better to keep your wife happy. Happy wife, happy life.
Amen, girl. Amen. Or Sheila, what do you think? Are they 24 years? Cheaper to keep her. Amen to that shit.
He didn't have anything. She's rich.
Me and my jalopy agree with you. Cheaper to keep her.
Yes, they're married.
That is also another podcast. You think they're still married 24 years later?
I do, because I think Kimmy is the eternal optimist and will do whatever she can to make this work. She has that little outburst where she says, if you don't just forgive me, I'll just die. I'll die. I believe that she would die in that moment. I believe that Kimmy is doing whatever she can to make Michael happy and... yeah, so I think that they're happily married 24 years later. And I also have the cheat sheet because I was sick in my doctor's office in the fall of 2017 when the movie was 20 years old and there was an EW magazine. And that was one of the questions was, are Kimmy and Michael still married? And they all said yes.
OMG. Nice. Entertainment Weekly came through, huh?
They did. I was just like, I was delirious. And that's the one takeaway.
Maybe at 20 years, though. But remember, 23rd year was pandemic year.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Yes, yeah, I did not hear that shit in the vows. I did not hear "end through quarantine" in the vows.
I think the genius of Kimmy and Michael is probably that they don't spend a lot of time talking, because I think you throw them in the same house, especially if they have a whole fuck ton of kids. Man, I don't know. Michael's going to get some wanderlust about him, feel like he has to go write about some sports teams on the road. I don't know. Dee and Jason, what do you guys think? 24 years later, are Kim and Michael still married?
Okay, so it's 24 years later. That means that she's just getting the last of the kids out of the house, right? They've had, whatever, three kids, and she's just gotten the last of them out of the house. She's an empty nester, and now she's suspicious that he might be fooling around, and so who does she call but his best friend to come and figure out if he's having a lurid affair on her? I think that's the way this part two goes.
Ooh, I didn't. All right, we're breaking scripts. I like that.
I like it. I like it.
I'm casting my
best friend's divorce.
Yes. Oh, ouch. Yes, I'm very much in the camp that they're still loving and devoted and have a happy marriage.
You guys, you're all such romantics. I love that.
It's totally gross.
They are in love. They are beautiful, and finances is not an issue.
No, not when you're Comiskey money.
Jeez. Except for that, it's not true.
Again, she comes from billions. He's not going anywhere.
Nope.
We do know that people who have a lot of money tend to develop drinking problems, right? We know
that. That's okay. We didn't talk about their alcohol.
I don't have a lot of money.
She spent 23 years. She gave up on her dreams to marry him. She raised his kids.
Yeah, I don't think she's an architect.
Brandy, I'm with you. If that's if they're still married, they are two miserable motherfucking people.
She looks at him every day and wants to bash him over the head with a bottle, but doesn't, because she doesn't want to go to jail.
I think they're happily married, and they haven't spoken with Jules for 24 years.
Yeah, that part.
Yes.
Interesting. Ouch. If they come back from there, because they leave it off like things are all copacetic. So it's curious if they come back from their honeymoon and like Michael is allowed to speak to Jules. I don't know.
I doubt it.
They definitely make it seem that way. But you have to think Kimmy is going to have a little bit of, you want some of this, you know, loving, then you got to ditch the big redhead girl.
It all depends if Michael said Jules's name during sex at any point during their honeymoon.
Hmm. interesting. What if Kimmy had said Jules's name during sex?
Oh, well, that's just okay in this world.
Michael
right?
would have been fine with that.
He's excited.
His two best girls, right?
There you go. He's like, God, thank God I wrote to Penthouse. They finally published my article. Guys, I don't know. This is a marriage born of a mistake and is a horrible idea. And if they are still married, they are miserable people that I would not want to be around.
Seriously.
That is my take. Yeah, for sure. Happy Valentine's Day, everyone. Happy Valentine's Day. We probably should talk about the music, because the soundtrack actually is what really made this movie as popular as it was. This soundtrack blew up around the world. It topped like charts in like a dozen different countries.
I bought it.
I still have it.
Nice.
I still have the CD.
Can't beat Dionne Warwick.
You can't beat Dionne Warwick. That's true.
You can. Her name is Whitney Houston, but keep going.
But still, they're related. So.
Still in the family, though. Yes, still in the exactly. family. I think this movie actually, I think the only significant award that it won, I think it won for its music.
Did you guys catch the Paul Giamatti cameo?
Yeah, I thought he was really good.
Crazy to think there was a time when people didn't know who he was, but at this point, he's like unknown. And I think it's a great scene. I think it's a great Paul Giamatti scene. It's a total small encapsulation of everything he will come to be in a movie star.
Yeah, he gives her the this too shall pass speech.
Yeah.
It was heartfelt. I liked him. Yeah, I liked it. Yeah.
I also remember when people could share cigarettes without fear of like getting COVID-19. But that was wild to me. Like, they both took a drag off of the same cigarette. I was just thinking, like, you don't know what she's sitting on the floor of a hotel, like a hallway.
That's
you know,
so funny.
It is the Drake Hotel. So, I mean, it is like, you know, a little upscale. So she's probably not totally skeeved.
She looked like a hooker who got kicked out the room sitting on the floor like she was.
She is not a hooker wearing those man suits.
It's Vivian from
Pretty
Woman.
It was the 90s.
Yeah, yeah.
Paul Giamatti, like, oh, I know you. You used to work this hotel back in like the late 80s when you were in Pretty Woman.
About 89.
Yeah. Well, we have to go around. I'd like when you answer if this is a love it or leave it. In two ways. One, is this a good Frisky Friday movie? Is this a good rom-com date movie to see with your significant other? And also, or if not, is this just a good movie? Is this a movie that you would just watch even if you were just by yourself on the couch?
My husband would not sit through this movie. So it's not his cup of tea. So, I mean, I love this movie. I loved it back then. There's parts of me that hate it now, but overall my takeaway is still, I still love it in a way. It's an atypical rom-com. I like the fact that she doesn't get the guy in the end. And I think that's like the part that saves it for me. So I'll sit down and watch it again, maybe in another 20 years and see how, 60 plus year old Sheila takes it. But,
Rupert Everett looking fine at 102.
I'll take it. It's all good.
Damn, Rupert.
As long as he's still 6'4 and silvery, I'm there for it.
But silvery or bald or dead, he'll be one of those things for sure.
Any one of those three. Yeah, I think it's a love it for a partner to sit and watch because it's cute. It's, there's cute moments in it. I mean, it's a good hour and 30 minutes to watch as long as you're taking it with the grain of salt that it is, not that it's a serious activity between men and women. Yeah, it still holds up. There's still the I say a little prayer scene, which absolutely makes the movie. So, yeah, I think it's definitely something that holds up. I won't say holds up well, but parts of it do hold up.
How about you, Brandy? Are we loving and leaving this movie as a date movie and or just as a regular movie?
Leave it and leave it. I would not go on a date and watch this movie. And my husband definitely wouldn't be watching this movie. He'd take me on a date to see Sopranos. As far as like just to sit down and watch this movie, it's not at all one that I would put on and be like, oh, I'm just going to watch this. But now, Steel Magnolias, yes. This, no.
Hell yeah, the Steel Magnolias, man. I love that movie. Oh, movie also I watched pretty recently. I watched it within like the last 2 years. I still love that movie. How about you, Sunny? Love it or leave it as a date movie? Love it or leave it as a regular movie?
From the moment I wake up before I put on
my makeup. I say a little prayer for you.
Oh my God, I love this. This is my life. I love it. So as a date movie, like I really enjoyed this movie when it came out. I love the soundtrack. I think my husband would humor me and watch this movie with me. So I'll say yes, I love it as a date movie and it's a fun movie and it's drama and it's just like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. Shock, drama, all that good stuff. But as to how it's aged, I'm going to leave it because it's very problematic. And it's not something that I would want my children to look up to, trying to get married at 20, trying to break up a wedding. I love it as a date night movie with my husband, but I'm going to leave it as to how it's aged.
I think that's totally fair. It's totally fair. Jason, what do you think? Love it or leave it as a date movie? Love it or leave it as a movie?
It's been a while since I watched it. I watched it this afternoon and I thought, you know, this is pretty cute. I mean, you got these Hollywood stars and they're in their prime and it's funny and I liked it. And I asked my wife, I'm like, did you like that? She's like, no, I couldn't stand it because Julia Roberts is such a backstabber. I couldn't take it. So for me, date movie, it's a leave it because if it makes the woman uncomfortable and mad at men, I'm out on it. But overall, I thought it was enjoyable. I mean, you know, for what it was, I liked it.
How about you, Dee?
Okay, just so that I don't have to automatically turn in my man card. I have five
turn
kids.
It in.
I have five kids. And this morning I was checking cattle in the snow in a flatbed pickup truck. I just need to say that because I love romantic comedies.
Here comes the man card.
And this movie made me laugh out loud. I teared up when everybody started cheering Kimmy on during the karaoke scene. It made me, I was almost crying along with her. I haven't seen the movie in 20 years. I watched it with my wife 20 years ago just before we had gotten married and I hadn't seen it in 20 years. And I still think it's a funny movie. I'm surprised I've gone this long without watching it. And so I know she loves it. It could definitely be a date movie, but I think you could watch this movie with any two people who enjoy romantic comedies. I watched it with my 15-year-old son and he thought it was great too. So I would say love it on both date, hang out with a friend and overall.
All right. Well, I think this works still as a date movie. I would watch this movie again. I think the themes of the young marriage, I think, is a bad idea and not something that we should be putting forth today. The villainous Jules shit is really irredeemable. I think, you know, as much as I love Julia Roberts, I think it's really hard to root for her at any point in this movie. But the stuff that works in this movie for me really, really works. I love the George Rupert Everett stuff. I love the music, the restaurant, Save a Little Prayer for You. I really like Cameron Diaz in this movie. I like when she kind of comes into her own. I love the bathroom scene, calling her a bitch and taking her to task. I love all that stuff. I think it works as a date movie if you say the right things while you're watching it and be like, damn, man, I would never, ever let any woman get so close to me with you, honey. You know, like, you're like, this is a chance for a guy to get some like credit and be like, Jules is unacceptable in how she behaves. I would not tolerate such a thing in our life. So for that, it works. I think the other messages don't age well at all. So maybe not as a regular movie. I watched it last night by myself on Valentine's Day and I found it funny. So who knows what the fuck I'm talking about. Yeah, overall, I still like this movie. The stuff that I liked, I still really like. Book of Lies, ladies, Randy and Sunny, where can people find you on social media? Where can they find your podcast? Give a little pimp to yourself. Where are you guys at?
All the things. So you could visit our website. It's bookoflies.com. I'm always lurking on Twitter at bookoflies.pod. On Instagram, Facebook, at Book of Lies Podcast. We drop a new episode every Tuesday full of fraud, lies, and all that good stuff.
Does that cover sending antiquated email programming out to your your best friends, bosses, and such?
No, but if you do it, I will talk about you on our podcast, definitely.
They're going to put you on blast. Dee and Jason, where can people find Surely You Can't Be Serious podcast, social media, all the podcast channels? Where can they find you guys?
Check out our webpage on theshirleypodcast.com. We're at Shirley Podcast on Twitter. We are at Shirley Podcast on Facebook. If you want to email us, you can email us at shirleypodcast@gmail.com.
What's the elevator pitch for your podcast if people haven't listened to our interview with the podcast episode?
I stole a line from you when we did our last interview. You said something about us being infotainment. And I was like, yeah, that's it. That's what we do. So we take two movies. We take sides on those two movies. But really what we do is we totally geek out about the history and stories and funny events that surround those movies. Albums that we're doing video games and in the next few weeks. It's just all kind of crazy.
Pretty 80s and 90s.
Yeah, we stick with 70s, 80s, 90s predominantly because that's our sweet spot. You know, we got married 20 years ago too, and lost all contact with human civilization after that. So yeah, we go back to the movies and music that we watched when we were young.
That's all right. Nothing really good has come out in the last 20 years prior to so humanity. Really, yeah. Humanity really topped in the early 90s. I agree with you. I think that's just our age, though, showing. Sheila, where can people find you on social media? And what kind of podcasts are you working on over at Pod Clubhouse?
I'm on Twitter. I'm Sheels McGangsta. That's with an A at the end. And I'm working on Prodigal Son podcast for Pod Clubhouse right now. Yellowstone, we're doing a rewind. We're going back to seasons 1 and 2. Currently, we're in the middle of season 2 in Yellowstone. And basically, the episodes are dropping 1 a week, and it's going to bring us right to the season 4 premiere of Yellowstone. And I just wrapped up The Stand with Paul over there at Pod Clubhouse. So lots of Pod Clubhousing going on in my life, and I love it.
Guys, thank you all so much for coming out and hanging out with us for Frisky Fridays in February. Can't wait till we come up with another. Maybe we'll do Steel Magnolias next. How about that?
That'd be sweet.
I'd be down for that. Love.
All right, y'all, we're going to go get ourselves an armadillo cake. So we're going to leave this podcast right here, and we're going to go cut into an armadillo cake and make it look like it's bleeding.
Yeah.
My colors are blush and bashful.
Yeah, they are.
They're pink and paint.
Don't you talk about me like I'm not here.
Shelby! Shelby, drink the orange juice, Shelby!
You should be even talking about that movie.
God damn it. Tom Skerritt. What a fucking run he had between Top Gun and Steel Magnolias and then Picket Fences.
Oh, my God.
Goddamn yeah. National David treasure. Garnett.
Yes.
Oh, kind of love it. All right, guys. We're coming back in 10 minutes to talk about Steel Magnolias. Seriously, I thank you guys all so much for coming out and having such a fun conversation about My Best Friend's Wedding.
It's been fun. Thank you
for having us. This was so much fun, guys.
Yeah. Good to meet everybody.
All right. Talk to you soon. Bye.
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 Bye, guys.
Thank you for listening. This has been an original Pod Clubhouse production. Pod Clubhouse is a podcast network dedicated to encouraging collaboration among podcasters and friends to bring a fresh voice and diverse perspective on a wide array of content. Please visit and leave a comment for us at podclubhouse.com. Rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast feeds on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can find us at Pod Clubhouse. Our DMs are always open, and we'd love to hear from you.